Real people, real radio. Wherever you are, make it TFR. Truth Frequency Radio.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, once again to Red Pill Reports. My name is JD. We are live right now. It is the 13th day of January of the 2015 year, and it is Tuesday. We made it through Monday, so congratulations everyone out there on that. Hope you guys enjoyed the show yesterday. Had a very large listener response to LA, and man, I really enjoyed that show, so I hope you guys did as well. Thank you all of you who were in the chat room yesterday, and the chat room is live again right now. You can go to truthfrequencyradio.com and get into the chat room there, and if you have questions or comments about any of the news that we're going to cover today or any questions for our guests that we're going to have, that would be a great place to do that. Also, if you want to go and check out redpillreports.com, really, really appreciate those of you guys who are going there every single day. The guys do such a great job of keeping that site looking sharp, and every day, as usual, there is a show section outlining the guests and the topic of discussion for the day, and as well, there's always going to be a lot of news down below, all the pertinent news articles from around the world, things that we think you guys probably ought to know about as we're all going through this crazy experience together here. But today, it's going to be a very special show, ladies and gentlemen. And so essentially today, we are taking it up a notch, guys. We have talked to Greg Morse and Scott Bennett in the past a couple of different times. I'm sure all of you are aware of the mortgage crisis story that we have been talking about pretty much ad nauseum here on Red Pill Reports. So what we're talking about today, again, is the next level in the fight against this corrupt banking cartel. So what we're going to try and do today, ladies and gentlemen, is we're just going to break the lid off of this whole mortgage crisis, tax evasion, derivative lending, international banking cartel, terror funding network thing. I don't know what else to call it. That's the best, most truncated version of a title that I can come up with for this whole deal. So we're going to cut the news short today by about a half an hour. So as soon as I'm done rambling here, I will get into some headlines today. But there's going to be a lot that I can't get to, which is why I was reminding everybody that if you go to redpillreports.com in the show section, you'll be able to see how far short I fall today. So anyway, we essentially are going to try to weave a thread for you guys today. How are we going to do that? We're going to spend an hour and a half trying to weave a thread from your compromised mortgage, which is almost a definitive fact at this point, ladies and gentlemen, that your mortgage, you, the one listening to the radio right now, your mortgage is compromised, okay? So we're going to talk about the compromise of your mortgage. We're going to weave a thread from that through national and international banking institutions into the bowels of black ops and terror funding. And if that wasn't enough, and I got to be honest, if we get through that in an hour and a half, I'm going to be pretty impressed. If that was not enough, we're also going to bring it full circle and outline for you the solution, how we can actually fix this problem. And we're going to talk about some of the listeners out there that have already taken the steps. They've already done this stuff that we're talking about, we're asking you guys to do now. So how are we going to do all this? Well, we're going to have a series of very special guests on today. Again, Greg Morse is going to be joining us here in about a half an hour, along with Scott Bennett. Obviously, those two guys for Red Pill listeners probably don't need too much of an introduction, but I'll introduce them more. They come onto the on the air in about a half an hour. And then at the 11 o'clock hour, so the second hour of the program today, Susan Lindauer is going to be joining us. Obviously, Susan Lindauer, kind of a legend in the whistleblowing, arena. So we're kind of going to have a roundtable discussion today. Susan has kind of come into the Red Pill team here in terms of this particular story as we're breaking it, and is able to corroborate a lot of the things, everything essentially, that Scott Bennett and Greg Morse have uncovered, and also taking it to another level. So again, we're kicking it up a notch today. It's going to be a big show. We've got a big task at hand, ladies and gentlemen, to try and get all of these dots connected and then bring it around to solutions, but also validating everything that we're saying right now. All of this information that we're going to be talking about today can be found at redpillreports.com. There's a sidebar section there, mortgage crisis. That's essentially where all of the factual information that we're going to be discussing, the links to the petition that we're going to be talking about are on the website, as well as a whole lot of background under the mortgage crisis section. In terms of articles that have been written about this, both in staff and by Greg and Scott themselves. So lots of information we're going to go over today. Give you the heads up, too. Ken Shorkin Jr. will be on the show tomorrow. Deborah Tavares on Thursday and Gary Milievsky on Friday. My goodness, this is probably going to be the biggest week in Red Pill's history. I cannot thank you guys enough out there, listeners, and talking to you guys. For making that happen. I mean, you guys really kicked it up a notch yesterday with listenership, and just I can't tell you how humbling it is to have all of you out there. Because again, without you guys, we wouldn't be doing anything. We'd just be sitting here talking to myself. So anyway, let's move on. I want to get into some news right now before we get into the meat of the program here. So what is going on around the world? Well, martial law in France right now, essentially, ladies and gentlemen, after the large shooting that allegedly took place last week, 10,000 troops are going to be deployed in France's Jewish schools, synagogues, and neighborhoods, according to a report from Reuters. So kind of looking a little bit dramatic there. I don't necessarily, I don't want to say that's too overdramatic of a response, but it does seem a little bit crazy when you consider, how many people die in car accidents every year? We're not going to flood the streets with police officers for that. 10,000 police is quite a lot. For a country the size of France, that seems like quite a lot. So anyway, 10,000 police, they're going to be patrolling starting this evening, and they will be, as I said, guarding Jewish enclaves and places that they consider to be significant terrorist threats right now. And it's obviously the highest level of terror alert that the French people have experienced. There, a lot of people are kind of considering this to be France's 9/11. Not sure that I necessarily agree with that as well. But since we are going to have a 9/11 expert on the show today, I imagine that topic will probably come up at some point. Also, needs to be pointed out again that Mr. Obama decided not to appear during the rally the other day. Also kind of interesting about that rally, François Hollande, the French president, actually asked Israeli Prime Minister Netanyahu not to take part in the rally, and was pretty surprised that Netanyahu decided to show up anyway. Je suis hypocrite, I guess would be the way that I would pronounce that. But the French president claimed that the premier's presence would be divisive, so that's kind of makes a lot of sense to me, really. But the report actually goes a little bit further and says that when the Israeli premier was initially situated in the rally, he was in the second row of leaders, but that he somehow shimmied his way to the front row, to be alongside Hollande and the German chancellor and kind of appear right up front there. So that actually angered Hollande enough that he made an early exit as soon as Netanyahu took the podium to address the ceremony following the march on Sunday. So kind of hypocritical, in my opinion, for Netanyahu to show up at something like that. Also, really, really telling that Mr. President Barack Obama did not show up at that rally. I think that kind of shows his solidarity with the Muslim community a little extremely, in my opinion. That's just me, though. Let's see. Unidentified airplanes are apparently supplying ISIS troops armed from Saudi Arabia. So this is another claim that the U.S., or in this case a member of the U.S.-led coalition, are supplying arms and other supplies to ISIS. This is a report from Hussein Aramadi. who is the head of the political commission of Hezbollah brigades in Iraq. He disclosed that his forces have discovered Saudi-supplied arms and ammunition in areas taken back from ISIL control, adding that the arm aids have been dropping down from Tekfiri terrorists by unidentified aircraft. So he reiterated that unknown airplanes supplying ISIL with weapons in coordination with the United States, which actually makes a lot of sense. I'm kind of starting to lean, well, I'm not leaning towards ISIS obviously being a creation of the government. I think that's probably a given at this point, but I'm starting to wonder a little bit more about the agenda of ISIS, especially given the turmoil they're causing in the neighboring communities there, such as Iraq. Anyway, moving on, Cuba has freed all 53 political prisoners. According to the Washington Examiner, the Cuban government has reportedly completed the release of all 53 political prisoners it had promised to free under a landmark deal, and this is according to Reuters on Monday. The exact number and identity of prisoners released over the weekend will remain unknown for now, but the White House plans to provide the names of all 53 to Congress in order to eventually publicly reveal their names. Releasing the last detainees was described as a milestone by the U.S. officials, who also said that they will continue to press Castro to free more people considered to be political prisoners by the Cuban government. So hopefully the cigar walls will start flowing, or the cigar walls will drop soon and cigars will start flowing. That's my only real hope. Actually, I'd love to go to Cuba as a tourist. I think that has got to be an absolutely beautiful country. I'd love to get an opportunity to go down there and maybe run into Tupac. Anyway, McDonald's having a major problem in Japan. Apparently, this is like the third case of just going on in the last, I don't know, what, 2-3 weeks? A Japanese man who now bought a cheeseburger at McDonald's found a 5-millimeter long metal chip in his meal, according to local media there in Japan. Obviously coming hot on the heels of a string of incidents, including plastic and vinyl found in chicken nuggets and a tooth that someone found in their French fries the other day. Gross, first of all. Why would you be eating McDonald's at all, period? Second of all, tooth? That's disgusting. Someone else found pieces of napkins in the juice. Anyway, McDonald's in Japan apologizing for the incidents. They say they are going through them one by one, trying to figure out what is going on. It kind of sounds like some employees over there maybe have a vendetta against McDonald's, because if you think about the supply chain, none of these things, you know, McNuggets and fries and burgers, they all come from different places. So it would be unusual. Now, if you had, you know, a whole bunch of gross stuff showing up in one food product that they sell, well, I guess that's a bad way to say that. If you had a whole bunch of really weird anomalies showing up in one of their food products, like teeth, you know, all coming from one plant, then I think you could say, for sure, you could isolate the problem, but that sounds unusual to me that there's so many different anomalies going on. Anyway, NATO defense missiles have now arrived in Turkey. NATO air defenses belonging to the Spanish military have arrived at a port in Turkey's southern province of Hatay. Authorities said that they started unloading the naval ships carrying Patriot missiles on Friday, according to the Anadolu agency, and Turkey had requested NATO's assistance for defense against potential attacks across its southern border with Syria. So, man, this is whole thing with NATO's involvement, trying to bolster Turkey's protection against ISIS, while at the same time ISIS apparently being funded by Israel and at least at a minimum given weapons from Saudi Arabia, clearly one of our allies. So, boy, Turkey just caught between two really crappy positions right now, being part of NATO and then having to deal with this ISIS thing, while at the same time, they still have to deal with the remnants of Syria. Once Syria does, in fact, fall, which it, you know, eventually will, because we're just going to continue to put pressure on Assad until he goes away. So, wow, I just can't even imagine trying to be in Turkey's position right now. But anyway, so they have gotten weapons from the Spanish military, you know, portion of NATO. The equipment is going to be deployed across the southern province of Adana in the southern central Anatolia at the 10th Tanker Base Command, which is a U.S. Air Force base there, primarily used by the U.S. and Turkish Air Force bases. Now, back in 2012, the U.S., Germany, and the Netherlands sent two Patriot missiles to fellow NATO member Turkey as the civil war in neighboring Syria intensified. Shells fired inside of Syria frequently find their way into Turkey across their 800 and 22-kilometer border between the two countries. So back in September, Spain decided to send its batteries along with 130 soldiers to Turkey to replace withdrawing Dutch units. The Netherlands had announced in August they were no longer able to fund their mission there, so the U.S. and German Patriot missiles are in Turkey to remain there, it seems like, at least going forward. And last week, Germany's cabinet agreed to leave its batteries in Turkey for at least another year, and that still needs to be approved by the government there. But if approved, the mandate will allow up to 400 more German soldiers to serve in Turkey until 2016. So again, bolstering the NATO support in the area, probably would not be surprising to find any of these weapons from Turkey finding their way into moderate jihadist hands over in Syria, to which they will probably then find their way into less moderate jihadists, and we all know how that song goes. Interpol puts Ukraine's ousted president Yanukovych on the most wanted list. So he is him and his son Alexander, former Prime Minister Nikolai Azarov, along with several other Ukrainian leaders, on the international most wanted list. Interpol, which coordinates international police activity around the world, has put former Ukrainian president on its international watch list following charges of misappropriation and embezzlement laid in the Ukraine. They published this just on Monday. Yanukovych fled across the border into Russia in February last year when he was ousted in the course of months of street protests in Kiev organized after he allegedly scrapped the signing of the EU association agreements. Not really necessarily what happened, but again, this is an RT story, so you kind of have to take it with a grain of salt. Most likely, what happened was that the government, NATO, and we all pretty much put in a junta government there and ousted Yanukovych. So anyway, current whereabouts of Yanukovych are unknown. If I were him, I'd be hanging out in Cyprus someplace, but that's just me. Here's some good news coming out of the United States. I don't know if it's good news, but it's at least a little bit of closure. Two Albuquerque police officers have now been charged with murder in the March killing of a homeless camper, a shooting that obviously generated sometimes violent protests around the city and sparked a federal investigation. And this is according to prosecutors on Monday. SWAT team member Dominique Perez and former detective Keith Sandy will each face a single count of open murder in the death of 38-year-old James Boyd. Second District Attorney Kerry Brandenburg said open murder allows prosecutors to pursue either first or second degree murder charges. And police say that Perez and Sandy fatally shot Boyd, who was holding a knife, kind of, during the hours-long standoff in the foothills of the Sandia Mountains. And video from an officer's helmet cam showed Boyd, who had struggled with mental illness, appearing to surrender when the officers opened fire on him and essentially murdered him on film. And I'm sure a lot of you people out there following the police brutality issue know exactly what issue this is, but at least a little bit of closure coming out of that. Still an absolutely tragic and unnecessary event. It makes me want to once again applaud Portland's police department now for issuing new policies on how they deal with people who apparently are having mental crises. And Portland's new policy is to walk away, which is like genius. I know it's common sense applied in reality. You never see that anymore. But anyway, U.S. Supreme Court on Monday declined to take up another broad challenge to President Barack Obama's signature health care law. So the court rejected an appeal filed by the Association of American Physicians and Surgeons and the Alliance for Natural Health USA. The group had challenged various aspects of the law known as Obamacare, including the so-called individual mandate. That would be the portion that requires people to obtain health insurance or pay a tax. So, did not successfully get to the Supreme Court on that particular case. They are actually hearing a separate challenge right now to another key part of the law, which, if successful, will deprive millions of Americans of tax credit subsidies in order to help them pay for this affordable health insurance. I don't know anybody that signed up for that. Have you guys signed up for that? I don't even know how to sign up for it. I had this impression that I was supposed to do something at one point on the computer or something, but just haven't gotten around to it yet. I don't know. Maybe it's just me. And the National Security Agency right now calling for more power in the realm of cybersecurity, obviously talking about this the Sony hack, which has pretty much been discredited. You know, the cybersecurity organizations in the government, FBI, whatever, how you want to call them, pretty much come out blaming North Korea over and over and over for the Sony hack. But many, many independent researchers have said, not so fast. not really what's going on. But for a lot of years, privacy advocates have been pushing against the Cyber Intelligence Sharing and Protection Act, otherwise known as CISPA, which eliminates all privacy protections on the sharing of private information so long as it's done for cybersecurity purposes, quote-unquote. CISPA has failed in the past, but now it's back again. Republican Dutch Ruppersberg, who is a Democrat. Representative Dutch Ruppersberg, who is a Democrat from Maryland, its longtime advocate of CISPA. He reintroduced it now and is citing the lack citing the hack of Sony Pictures, as I mentioned, putatively by North Korea, as justification for these new powers. So it's not really looking good for people right now. And what's more frightening is that a lot of insiders are suggesting that the Sony hack was not enough to get these powers pushed through, a.k.a. keep your head on a swivel for some sort of cyber false flag type of terror thing. That's all I'm saying. New York City has announced that they will be banning Styrofoam, starting in the city July of this year, an attempt to quote-unquote green up the city. This decision came after the Department of Sanitation said that expanded polyesterine is non-recyclable. So there was a law that passed last year that allowed the Styrofoam to stay around, provided that the recycling authorities there could come up with a plan to recycle it. They could not. So essentially, as of July this summer, they will start winding down the use of Styrofoam containers in New York City. So you're talking about traditional coffee cups, food containers, packaging materials, insulation, things like that. De Blasio is optimistic about the ban's environmental impact, and the law is expected to keep some 30,000 tons of EPS waste out of New York landfills and streets. So there you go, New York, losing that Styrofoam here pretty quick. And let's see. I want to jump into some economic news here really quick. Looks like the Dow is up quite a bit today right now. If that is a current number, I'm going to refresh that, make sure that wasn't a close from yesterday. Let's look at oil, still continuing its monumental slide, 45.85, which is pretty significantly low, especially considering the $106 highs back this summer. Let's see what gold and silver are doing. Gold still moving on up, $12.36 for gold. $17, we've broken the $17 on silver, $17.07. We'll get you an ounce of silver right now. Let's see here, going back to the Dow. Dow is way up. Wasn't a glitch here. $2.26 up on the Dow this morning. Happy days are here again. Go team. So excited to be part of this plan. Let's see here. Although Bank of America, Goldman Sachs, they all did kind of issue a little bit of a warning yesterday about the plunge in oil prices. This article is on Zero Hedge right now. I'm not going to go through the whole thing, but they do essentially start the whole debacle here with some really good news. The good news is that average Americans have spent a dollar more this month than they did at the same time last year. So if you think about the falling oil prices being a boon for the economy and how much extra money everybody has in their accounts right now, obviously, you know, that's going to flow right back into the economy. It's going to be great. So the great news, according to Gallup polls, is that everybody collectively, according to Gallup polls, has spent an additional dollar and compared to last year. And yeah, that's actually the good news. The bad news is that all of the big banks are pretty aware of this global oil slide, and it is going to have a pretty profound effect. I'm not going to read these whole things because there's a bunch of scary charts, just like there always is on Zero Hedge, but Tyler Durden always does such a good job bringing this stuff together. Essentially, right now, we're not out of the woods yet on this oil slide thing. Obviously, it's continuing to go down. We've seen the first couple of shale producers claiming bankruptcy just early this week. So, again, probably going to continue to be bad economically in the country. But enjoy the low gas prices while you've got them. I really wish food prices would come down some, because gas prices are in half. It seems to me like food prices should be way down, but not seeming to be happening. And is there a bank run happening in Greece right now? That's a question that Mike Mish Shedlock is asking. He's a financial advisor and has his own site there. But he pointed out in a recent column that there has been an incredible surge of withdrawals from the Greek banks in recent months. In November, the consumers pulled out roughly $220 million from withdrawals, okay, in the Greek banks. But in December, that number jumped all the way to $3 billion. That's a huge, huge, huge jump in withdrawals. Greeks are depositing much less money in the banks as well. Deposits have dropped almost 40% since 2010. And a lot of investors are kind of warning people that if you've got assets in Greek banks, might be a really good time to get them. And obviously politicians asking people to remain calm. The retail apocalypse apparently continuing, also JCPenney being the latest victim. They are planning on closing 40 stores this year, approximately cutting 2,250 jobs as it tries to improve its profitability. Most of these stores are going to be located in malls and are going to be closed by the 4th of April. Again, closing about 40 more JCPenney stores. So that's obviously not a fantastic deal. Want to get into quick tech stuff here real fast, too, because hackers claiming allegiance to the Islamic State took control of the social media accounts of the U.S. military central command on Monday, posting threatening messages and propaganda videos along with some military documents. But the command's Twitter and YouTube accounts were eventually taken offline, but not before a string of tweets and the release of military documents, quote-unquote, some of which listed contact information for senior military personnel. And a CENTCOM spokesman confirmed their accounts were compromised and said later that the accounts have been taken offline. So why are we seeing stories like this from CENTCOM coming out? It's funny because, it's not essentially CENTCOM that's being hacked here. It's Twitter that's being hacked. It's all the social media sites, which really are probably at the result of phishing experiments done by hackers and bad employees of U.S. Central Command, people who are opening email attachments and allowing hackers to get into their Facebook account. So it's interesting to me. We're seeing all of this hype about cybersecurity, and we'll talk to Gary Malievsky on this on Friday about this, but it's just interesting. We're seeing all this hype about cybersecurity right now, and this is kind of the best example that they can give, is that their Twitter feed was hacked, and oh my gosh. So anyway, be prepared for some sort of major cyber event coming up in the future, because I think these people are chomping at the bit to get control of the internet. Anyway, I digress. Lots more news at redpillreports.com. I couldn't get to you. Please stay here for the 3-minute break. We've got a lot to talk about in the next segments, ladies and gentlemen. Greg Morris, Scott Bennett, and eventually Susan Lindauer will be here. Keep it right here, guys. 3-minute break. Right back.
Chris and Sheree Geo here, founders of Truth Frequency Radio. We just wanted to take a moment to thank all of you for making TFR the biggest and the best independent radio station out there.
When we first entered the alternative media scene in 2009, we were really taken aback by the amount of infighting, backbiting, fear-based reporting, and ego-driven personalities. That's when we knew we had to set ourselves apart and set a new standard in broadcasting. And thus, TFR was conceived as a listener-supported station with no corporate or outside influence and limited commercial interruptions.
You can support our efforts by signing up for a VIP membership at truthfrequencyradio.com/signup or by making a donation at truthfrequencyradio.com/donate.
For less than $4 a month, you can ensure that TFR continues broadcasting for years to come. Real people, real radio.
Wherever you are, make it TFR.
Big business has discovered the preparedness market, and that makes it difficult to know where to go and who to trust. MyPatriotSupply.com is owned and operated by patriots just like you, has the best prices on storable food, non-GMO seeds, water filtration devices, home canning equipment, survival and self-reliance books, and more. MyPatriotSupply.com has old-fashioned values and the absolute best customer service in the industry. Look for the deal of the day, unique, affordable survival supplies that fit anyone's budget. Get same-day shipping on all orders and free shipping on orders over $49. Call 866-229-0927, 866-229-0927, or visit MyPatriotSupply.com for emergency preparedness, self-reliance, and food independence. Shop with a name you know and a name you can trust. Before it's time to survive, it's time to prepare. MyPatriotSupply.com.
Did you know there are 3 million edible food plants on Earth, and none have the nutritional value of the hemp plant? HempUSA.org offers you hemp protein powder. It does not contain chemicals or THC, is non-GMO, and is 100% gluten-free. Hemp protein powder burns fat, builds muscle, contains 53% protein, and feeds the body the nutrients it needs. Call 888-910-4367 and see what our powder, seeds, and oil can do for you. Only at HempUSA.org.
Wouldn't
Wouldn't it be nice to have one product that replaces more than 10, saving you space, time, and money? HempUSA.org has a complete full-spectrum vitamin mineral detox formulation called Micro Plant Powder Gold. Micro Plant Powder Gold contains 101 vitamins, minerals, probiotics, and iodine, has a 100-year shelf life, and is a perfect addition to any storage shelter. Make Micro Plant Powder Gold your choice. Call 888-910-4367 or visit HempUSA.org today.
Like a cancer that's silently spread.
Agent for Truth with Joe Bannister. Sundays on Truth Frequency Radio.
Welcome back to the radio show, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you guys for being here and for sticking with us through that 3-minute break. We have got our work cut out for us this morning, ladies and gentlemen. So I have enlisted the help of two incredible gentlemen to come onto the program and help us weave this tale. We're going to try and weave this thread from your compromised mortgage through the hands of the international banking cartels into the bowels of we're having a little communication here. Into the bowels of Black Projects and in the hands of terrorist funding. Hold one second here. I'm going to get rid of that connection and see if we can get him back on the air. This is the beauty of live radio, ladies and gentlemen. So just bear with us here for one quick second. So what we're going to talk about today is obviously this huge mortgage crisis issue. Obviously, we've talked about it with Greg Morse and Scott Bennett. Both of these guys have come together with an amazing amount of information and been able to really corroborate each other's work in a way that really kind of brings this whole thing to a head. And I got to see if I can get Greg to mute his microphone out. We're having some issues here, and that's not how I want to start the day here, guys, so I apologize. okay, I'm going to try and get Greg on one more time here, and then we're going to move on.
I'm here.
Okay, Greg, could you turn your microphone down just a little bit? We got a little bit of hazy goofiness going on. I'm not sure if you can do that, but if you can get into your settings there and turn your mic down just a touch, that would be very helpful.
Is that any better?
It's a little better. We're going to go with that. Okay, so, ladies and gentlemen, first and foremost, let me welcome Greg Morse to the show. Greg Morse is an ex-military gentleman, is an ex-F-4 Phantom pilot. Absolute bulldog, an expert in asymmetrical intelligence, and honestly, gentlemen, one of the gentlemen I'm most proud to know in my life. So, Greg, thank you for taking time out of your schedule to join us once again on Red Pill Reports today.
Oh, thanks for having me.
Well, of course. So, okay, we're talking about a very large puzzle here, and we're going to attempt to put it together over the next hour and a half. So will you start the ball rolling here by talking a little bit about your portion of the puzzle and your history with it, and then just kind of bring us up to speed with where we're at with your piece of the puzzle, sir.
I start on the day the appraiser comes out to a piece of property to evaluate the plausibility of that property as it applies to getting a loan for you, and I go all the way through the process without any exclusions, all the way up to the point where the DTCC, the Depository Trust and Clearing Corporation at 35 Water Street in Wall Street, who controls Wall Street, puts that money on deposit with the Federal Reserve and completes their theft of your money.
Okay, so let's outline for the listeners how it was that you came across that discovery and how it was, you know, that you, what's the nexus between you and that organization or that transaction of money, as it were?
Had one house, one loan, never missed a payment, never late, through a bunch of circuitous events, I became aware that my mortgage broker was indicted on 5 counts of mortgage fraud. I then had a number of people that I had worked with in disclosing the SNL debacle 30 years ago call me and ask if I would help them try to determine what had gone on. We investigated my mortgage. We found over 1,000 identifiable, cited individual events of statute breakage, code violation, and outright fraud.
And that's typical from what you have described in most of the mortgages across the country at this point. Is that correct?
That is correct. Everybody's in the same boat, whether they know it or not.
Okay. Well, let's bring it down to the brass tacks then. What exactly is your hope that the listeners are going to take away from our discussion today? What is it that you want to most impress upon them? Let's just get it out of the way right now.
One, you'll never own your home no matter how much money you pay on it. Mm-hmm. Number two, you're already victimized whether you've got good credit, bad credit, whether you think you had a subprime mortgage or not. That has nothing to do with it. Those are all propaganda-instigated subterfuges to keep you from knowing what's really going on. The technical fact of the matter is over 90% of the mortgages in this country have been run through the MERS-Fannie Mae system, which by definition breaks the chain of title, destroys the value in the property, and the end result of that is you have become the victim of peonage, which is unconstitutional under both the Constitution and federal code, and you are now an involuntarily indentured servant doing nothing but maintaining that property, keeping the value of it up for the people that own it, which is the federal government predominantly, and pay the property taxes on it. So what we're hoping to do is to get people to become aware of the gravity of this situation, the all-encompassing impact of this on the status of the United States economy, the fraud that's taken place, and then get them to sign the petition so that Scott, myself, Susan, and others can go to Congress with the support of as many Americans as want to come. Everybody's welcome. As we say in Texas, come on down. We'll all go to Congress, and we're going to blow the place up with this information. But we're just going to blow all this information out and watch the cockroaches run and see if we can't stop this problem.
I love it. I love it, and I'm really excited to be a part of it. A lot of the information that we're talking about right now can be found both on Greg's website, which is SaveOurFamilyAndHome.com, as well as RedPillReports.com. We do as much as we can to try and encapsulate all of this information so that's easy for people to go out and get. And I want to talk also, because what we basically outlined just now, just with Greg, was the first major red flag in this story, is that all of our mortgages are compromised, and that the chain of title, which is the most important aspect of your proof of home ownership, is subject to question at this point. And we're seeing it unfold across the nation. Every stupid day I'm seeing stories about MERS getting away with something else, you know, them winning another case in court, something like that. So the slope is slanted, and we are sliding down it, ladies and gentlemen. All of our homes are going with us. But the other side of the coin, or at least the next unveiling that we've got, is where this money that has been stolen from us is actually going. So then we start to talk about Scott Bennett's research. And for those of you guys who don't know Scott Bennett, also another military gentleman, ex-U.S. Army Special Operations Officer, also a Civil Affairs Psychological Operations Command, Global Psychological Warfare Counterterrorism Analyst. I mean, these people that we're talking to, ladies and gentlemen, are leagues and leagues and leagues beyond smart compared to myself. So I'm humbled that these guys are here and part of this team as we're getting this stuff accomplished. So I want to turn it over to Scott for just a second, if I can. And first, Scott, thank you very much for joining us on the Red Pill Reports radio broadcast today.
Thank you, JD. I enjoy it very much.
Well, I'm happy to have you here. As I said, man, I'm just excited to try and be part of this team as we're breaking these barriers down. But so picking up from where Greg had left off, we've got the situation now where it's demonstrable that chain of title has been broken pretty much across the board in all these mortgages. I want to talk a little bit about your background, if you could give your background to the people and kind of how it is that you came into this information with Greg and how you can corroborate it, if you would, sir.
Yeah. Well, I worked in terrorist financing. I worked tracking the money supplies. I tracked the couriers. I tracked the banks. I tracked the hawalas. I tracked the countries, the royal families, the political governments within the area of operations of U.S. Central Command. That also included U.S. Special Operations Command. That also included the United States Department of State Counterterrorism Office. I worked as a defense contractor with Booz Allen Hamilton. I did a lot of papers and work in targeting Islamic terrorism. My military background was in psychological warfare, counterterrorism. I was given a direct commission in the military, specifically to develop psychological warfare theories, practices, techniques, on every scale and every sphere of the battle space. And my background had really been layered for the last 15 years. I had moved out to Washington, D.C. I'd worked at the Heritage Foundation. I'd worked in the Bush administration. I was in the Bush administration for 2003 to 2008. And I saw a lot of the reconstruction operations within Iraq. I saw a lot and helped author a lot of the materials that Heritage Foundation put forth. We're not even opening up the can of worms that I look forward to hearing from Susan Lindauer and others have brought in, like Barbara Honegger, about the 9/11 issues and the exposition of that. But I had drunk the Kool-Aid. I'd been recruited after the 9/11 attacks and joined the military as a result. And I was 38 years old, and I'd went into officer training and special operations in the Army, which is an easy task. It was one of the hardest things I ever did. And I didn't do it because I was economically challenged or socially dysfunctional or educationally a misfit. I was at the top of my game, making a six-figure salary, mm-hmm. working in the highest echelons of political, military, counterterrorism. But I wanted to go into the military to serve, to win the fight, specifically because I knew what I had learned and my skill set in advertising and profiling and interrogation, all that could be used by the Army. So I offered my services. I was recruited and I joined. And after going through all the training, I was sent down to U.S. Central Command. I was hired by Dov Zakheim. Dov Zakheim, as everyone will probably know, was the comptroller at the Pentagon, and he was a Booz Allen Hamilton senior fellow, and he had requested that I join his team tracking money sources of terrorism. And those money sources all over the globe, but specifically within U.S. Central Command. And when I went down and started working, I won't go into a lot of the details that are classified, but I will say the unclassified materials are, I saw a lot of dysfunctionality, a lot of problems. I was writing reports, making presentations, briefings to military figures, senior CIA. I worked in the interagency cell. So I worked with every U.S. government agency that dealt with terrorism and terrorist financing. I okay. worked with Treasury. I worked with State Department. I worked with FBI. I worked with Homeland Security. I worked with every military dimension. Every agency, very senior level. And, you know, I just saw a lot of problems and a lot of stupidity and a lot of ineffectiveness and things probably that a lot of military guys who are frustrated with the military would nod their head and say, yeah, we see a lot of that. The problem was we were in a major war and bad guys were killing soldiers with money that they were acquiring through various mechanisms and streams, including Swiss banking, European banking, Middle East banking, and they were filtering it and money laundering it. So I quickly became an expert in that field of operations. And I'm happy to go in later, but I was quickly identified as, I guess, a problem and an irritator and an investigator in things they didn't want investigated, because I was immediately, after 4 or 5 months and making a lot of noise, I found myself stopped at the front gate at MacDill, ordered out of my car at gunpoint, told I was being investigated for a DUI, which was never prosecuted. It was thrown out of court because it never existed. But nevertheless, I was thrown into a cell. I was interrogated for 10 hours. And I thought it was all a test. I thought it was an operation to see, you know, my fortitude, because I was going to be deployed, like a SEER training exercise, which is search, evasion, resistance, and escape, which all special operations go through. So I thought it was a test. I thought it was an examination. Little did I know it was sort of a conspiracy, if you will, to remove me from the game, because Dov Zakheim fired me immediately. And I said, well, this is all a big mistake. I don't know what this is about, but they knew. And I was removed from base and I was fired from Booz Allen Hamilton. And I still kept making a lot of noise. I went back to my Army unit and started trying to get this thrown out, investigated, requesting the military investigate this, because I was starting to catch on. There's funny political games going on with the Obama administration. And the next thing I know, because I was making noise, I was prosecuted by Eric Holder and Lanny Brewer for technical forms that were on my military housing and wearing my military uniform and not having my property registered. The first time in the history of the United States they've ever done that to a soldier with a civilian court, a civilian justice department. Right. I was denied the UCMJ. I was denied military lawyers. Wow. And again, I'm always thinking this is sort of an operation.
Right.
Next thing I know, the prosecutor is making a false story saying I dressed up in a police uniform, and they got a Wackenhut security guard to write an affidavit. Wackenhut is a CIA front, so I knew the game was getting ratcheted up a little bit.
Right.
And next thing I know, I go down thinking the whole thing is nonsense, going to be thrown out. And I was prosecuted and a civilian attorney. None of my materials were put on as evidence, which would have exonerated me. And the next thing I know, I'm thrown into a federal prison. Instead of 0 to 7 months and allowed to appeal, I'm given an enhancement to 36 months. And instead of being shipped to California, they ship me to Pennsylvania, where the story takes a turn for the miraculous. I happened to run into the Swiss banker who had been reporting to the Obama administration and the Bush administration, and Eric Holder and Lanny Brewer and CIA, all of this Swiss banking that had been funding terrorism and that had been related to mortgage frauds, money laundering, secret accounts, tax evasion. So this was Brad Birkenfeld at the Union Bank of Switzerland. And I met Brad in a federal prison, and we started to exchange notes. And I said, Brad, you couldn't make this up. If this was an operation where they sent me in to meet you and find you, they should advance me to colonel and give me a seven-figure bonus.
Right.
But it sort of haphazardly happened. And Brad and I went over 6 months, all the documentation, WikiLeaks cables, financial accounts, over 24,000 accounts. And they've lied. The government has lied, saying there's only 4,000. That's only nonsense.
Only 4,000, as only if that would be a better number anyway. But
yeah. So they've got all these Swiss bank accounts that have been floating around funding, among other things, CIA black budget operations, Muslim terrorist organizations of every stripe, Iranian, Sunni, ISIS, ISIL, every Al-Qaeda group. All this money, and the thing that kept affronting me and that really inflamed me to be committed to fight this was all the soldiers and the contractors who were being killed every day, maimed, having their faces blown off, their legs blown off. So Brad and I committed to expose this. He and I wrote letters to General James Mattis, U.S. Central Command chief, telling him all this. And Brad was immediately sent out of prison. He said, when I get out, I'm going to go back to the Senate. I want to have a hearing. I want to bring you in to testify a lot of the connections of this money to mortgages, banks, laundering facilities. He got out, and on September 11, 2012, the same day as Benghazi, he was paid off $104 million, and he went silent. He hasn't said anything.
Right.
I've got reports that it's because of threats. They've said, if you make a noise about this, we're going to kill you. Mm-hmm. Take the money. His ambition was to get out of the country, so he's laying low until he can facilitate that in another few months. They've subsequently entrapped him in another DUI at one of those stop points, which is, I think, a complete false operation.
Right.
But I immediately started making notes and filing reports up to Congress and military officials from 2012 to present day. And not one senator, no congressman, no military official ever responded or investigated the material that Birkenfeld and I sent. So my attack is still in the courts, and I'm still going back to bring all this material in. And subsequently, Greg Morse had contacted me, exposing another part of the puzzle.
Yeah, I want to bounce back to Greg if I can. Yeah. First of all, I want to ask Greg how important it was to meet Scott and how much, you know, fuel to the fire Scott's research has given to you. And to also ask you about your experience with trying to reach out to people to get some pressure put on anybody who's supposed to respond to this. I know that you have sent whistleblower packages independently also. So just talk a little bit about that, would you please, Greg?
Sure. I'll answer them in reverse order. When I became a federally known whistleblower, legal whistleblower, as a private citizen on April the 24th of last year, we sent out 600 to 700-page packages to over 505 people, including Obama, everybody in the Executive Department of Justice, all the senators, 38 of the 62 inspectors general, the G20, and God knows how many press media outlets. Out of all of that, we've had four responses from the Department of Justice, Department of Defense, Federal Trade Commission, and the General Accountability Office, all of which claim that the information we've submitted is not within their jurisdiction. Total, complete fraud, lying is treason.
Right.
Because we have all the data which shows how many things they have actually, in fact, been doing, which corroborates their belief that they do have jurisdiction because they've been working in this area. So we've had zero response from anybody who wants to touch this information. It's reflected by the process of my pro se represented federal civil RICO lawsuit, which is one step away from the Supreme Court. Now, when Scott and I became acquainted, it was fortuitous. It was symbiotic. He and I had nothing to do with it. To me, it was an act of God, quite frankly, because what happened was that when he and I got together, he's got a very interesting story. I think I've got a very interesting story, but it's like having flour in one bucket and butter in the other bucket. If you don't put them together in the same bucket, you can't make the cake. So when Scott and I got together, and then when gracious people like Susan Lindauer got involved and started talking to us, all the pieces of the puzzle that were required to make up a complete picture became apparent, and that obviously is of invaluable import. There's no way to quantify how important that is, because now we can show how the government was behind this, how the people in Congress were absolutely complicit as co-conspirators in the fraud, the cover-up, and that it was not a mortgage, it was not just a construct to create subprime mortgages so people can, in all the various media sources, can talk about subprime mortgages if that's a mantra of the day. That was not the point. It's the largest pre-constructed, pre-engineered RICO Agenda 21 and wealth land grab in the history of mankind. Third, it is the largest income tax evasion fraud and largest securities trading fraud in recorded history. That was the issue, because it took away people's property, it takes away their rights, it takes away their money, and it creates quadrillions of dollars generated on fraudulent derivatives-based securitized transactions, the funds of which, the proceeds of which, have then been used to funnel through the corrupt criminal cabal, which is what it is, let's call it what it is, all the way to locations like Union Bank of Switzerland, HSBC, and others that then use the money to foster the progression of our enemies, which then go out and kill our military boys and girls.
Man, I don't think you could put a finer point on it than you just did, Greg. That was an absolutely perfect synopsis of the situation that's going on right now. And so, you know, ladies and gentlemen, we have both sides of the coin here. We've got the entire line from your compromised mortgage all the way up through, you know, Scott Bennett's work, where he tracked the money through these Swiss bank accounts and actually watched it being funneled into black ops and terrorist organizations. So again, huge, just absolutely mind-bogglingly huge story, and everybody is affected by it, which is why we're going to continue to talk about this over and over. But I want to go back really quickly to Scott and just get your impression of why it is so important that we talk to Susan Lindauer, because she's obviously going to be joining us in about 6 minutes after the break here. Why is it that you guys wanted us to get in touch with Susan, and what do you think she adds to the puzzle?
Well, Susan Lindauer has her own experience as a whistleblower with all of her revelations concerning the 9/11 shenanigans from, and I'll let her articulate all of that, from the pre-9/11 to the post-9/11 operations within the Bush administration. She was the CIA asset, so she worked in the world that I worked in. She was a high-level intelligence person. She had access to all the materials and the documents. Most importantly, she's got the spirit of a true patriot and a whistleblower, and that is a patriot serves America and loves America and loves the family and the community they came from and loves the Constitution. And any time they see something that is compromising to the Constitution or damaging or what the American public would be outraged by, that whistleblower, that patriot, makes noise. They go forth and say, this is wrong. This is not what things are seeming to be. What is the force behind this? And immediately upon making those investigations, they are silenced, they are punished, mm-hmm. they are threatened, sometimes they're killed. And Susan Lindauer went through the same trauma that I went through. She right. was thrown onto a military prison without any trial, without any indictment, without any charge. They had done the same thing to me. It was a traumatic story. At the end of the day, she was completely exonerated, but she was thrown under the bus with the Patriot Act. Oh. Now, Linda has information and experience and documentation that will corroborate a lot of the players that are involved here, Dove okay. Zackheim, Booz Allen Hamilton. So we sort of come together in that perfect storm scenario. And the other fronts that are upcoming that will be another just add to the power are, of course, Edward Snowden and Julian Assange from WikiLeaks. Julian Assange and the WikiLeaks documents will be supplemental and corroborating to Susan's material. Mm-hmm. They already were used by Brad Birkenfeld and the Swiss banks. When I got a hold of them, I saw State Department counterterrorism and all the agencies that I worked for, and I saw the writing right there on the wall. Edward Snowden had observed Brad Birkenfeld being targeted by the CIA in Switzerland. They were coming after him to be an economic industrial espionage source. Mm-hmm. Susan Lindauer and her CIA background can corroborate a lot of that material. And Edward Snowden has been silenced by his lawyers to a large degree. These patriots, these whistleblowers, I know people get frustrated with the lack of intel that comes out, but you have to understand these lawyers who represent these people can be just thorns and tar pits.
Right, right. Well, ladies and gentlemen, we are in the deep end of the pool now. That is for sure. We got to take a quick 3-minute break. When we come back, we will still have Greg Morris and Scott Bennett on the show, but we will be joined by Susan Lindauer, and we will take this whole discussion up another notch. Please keep it right here. We are going to come around to solution action items, ladies and gentlemen. We'll be right back.
At Truth Frequency Radio, we bring you the very best personalities in the independent media without the corporate influence and with limited commercial interruption. Over the past year, Truth Frequency Radio has become one of the fastest-growing media outlets in the world, and we owe it all to you. That's why, with every donation of $30 or more, we'll send you your very own Survive Drive as a way of saying thanks for your continued support. The Survive Drive is jam-packed with nearly 600 ebooks to help you survive everything from everyday life to major disasters. Donate today and we'll continue to wage war against the powers that shouldn't be. Again, thanks for your support and for making Truth Frequency Radio your choice for news without the hate, hype, and fear.
Did you know that the blue lotus flower was used by the ancient Egyptians as an aphrodisiac to experience feelings of euphoria and ecstasy? And ecstasy. And ecstasy. Did you know that Thai kratom was used by the Buddhist monks to produce a relaxing and dreamlike state? Did you know San Pedro cactus was used by the Native Americans to quest for visions and heal the body? Bouncing Bear Botanicals is your number one supplier of rare and sacred plants and a proud sponsor of Truth Frequency Radio. By clicking on the banner at truthfrequencyradio.com, you can learn more about a vast selection of entheogens, including Amanita muscaria, also known as the sacred mushroom. So click on the banner at truthfrequencyradio.com, and you'll also get up to $40 off your next order.
Archaeology, astronomy, alchemy, secrets of the Holy Bible, hidden codes, of the Quran. Demonology, Tesla technology, solar power, extraterrestrials in the ancient world. More than 500 documentaries, an experimental film lab of cutting-edge music and art, full-length movies, conference reports, and weekly TV shows. The Enigma Channel is the world's first truly global TV station. www.enigmatv.com. Intelligent television for planet Earth.
This is the Truth Frequency Radio Network. We are TFR. Truth Frequency Radio.
Welcome back to the broadcast, ladies and gentlemen. This is, of course, your daily dose of deep programming. My name is JD, and we are moving into the second hour of our live broadcast today at Red Pill Reports. And we are very, very excited to be welcoming Miss Susan Lindauer to the show. If you don't know who Susan Lindauer is, because you've been living under a rock for the last 10 years, I will let you know. She's a former congressional staffer. She also covered Iraq and Libya at the United Nations as a U.S. intelligence asset. Remind me later, Susan, I want to have a very extensive conversation about Libya sometime. Anyway, so she was basically a backdoor channel asset on anti-terrorism from 93 up until 2003. Most notoriously, back in the summer of 2001, her team warned about a major terrorist attack involving airplane hijackings and the strike on the World Trade Center. And I think this is important because we just heard a little bit about Scott's background. And, of course, you know, Scott being tasked to do a job and then trying to go ahead and do that job and essentially then being targeted by the administration and put in prison, et cetera, et cetera. And your story has a lot of parallels with Scott's story. And so I wanted to definitely bring that up, and because it's really important for people to understand how much pressure is on whistleblowers and how difficult it is to actually get this information out and make a change in the world, and how much bravery it actually takes to get this stuff done. So anyway, Susan, thank you very much for joining us on Red Pill Reports today. We really appreciate you being here.
Well, I just want to say to Scott that I have such tremendous respect for your story, and I hope that my story will I welcome opportunities to do radio shows with you like this, because I want everyone to know what happened to you, and I want to be as supportive as I can. As far as going to prison, my dear, all of the best people are doing it.
Oh, that's a badge of honor I can't say I have yet.
Stanley Cohen, a great civil rights attorney who stood up and sued Israel on behalf of the Palestinian people for war crimes, sued Israel for war crimes against the Palestinians. He has just gone to prison, I believe this past week, for an 18-month sentence. But whistleblowers are the real whistleblowers. It is a mark of when you're the real thing, that they are very deeply, gravely threatened, because truth is so devastating and so important. For example, you said a moment ago that I had through my back channel, my team had given advance warnings about 9/11. Well, as it turns out, I learned about 9/11 from the CIA. And that's very important that I was tasked to threaten. I existed as a back channel. So if I was ordered to do something, I would do it, because that's what I was there for.
Right.
And I was there for private communications directly to the Iraqi government. And I gladly fulfilled that responsibility without hesitation. And I was ordered to communicate that the United States, at the highest levels of government above the exact words were above the CIA director and above the Secretary of State.
Wow.
Okay? There are only three individuals who have senior rank. Those are President George Bush, Vice President Dick Cheney, and Secretary of Defense Donald Rumsfeld.
Wow.
And in April of 2001, I had already been summoned to my CIA handler's office to deliver a message to the Iraqis. And when I came back, he asked me how the Iraqis had responded to the threat. And I said, oh, I didn't threaten them. I don't need to threaten them. Iraq's one of our best sources on anti-terrorism. So I was very polite. I told them what we needed, and I expect they'll pass it back to Baghdad like they always do, and then we'll get a response. Mm-hmm. And he said, I didn't tell you to be nice to those sand niggers. Ooh. Is the word he used.
Okay.
Sand niggers. He was really – it was a very graphic, crude conversation.
Yeah, it sounds
and
like-
he yelled and screamed and stormed around his office and was very – you know, spooky people are pretty tough in a fight. And I could see that he really believed this was a very serious threat. And I promised, I was chastened, and I said, I will go back and I will deliver the message exactly as you have communicated it, without any variation, and my apologies that I did not realize before what this was. And the message was, at the very highest levels of government, above the CIA director and above the Secretary of State, that they were threatening war against Iraq unless Baghdad provided intelligence on this conspiracy involving airplane hijackings and a strike on the World Trade Center. Well, Baghdad's response was very interesting. Baghdad had two responses, which were very important. They said, well, first of all the intelligence comes back to you. Okay. Yeah, we have checked this out. This conversation continued for several months through August, from April through August. And they said, well, you know, really and truly, Susan, all the intelligence about this attack comes back to you. It comes back to Washington. Everything is originating. All of this story about this attack is coming out of Washington.
Wow.
And Saddam was a great resource, I tell you. The second thing that they said was, and they said this immediately. When I went back in May, you know, I first visited them in April, and then I went after I got yelled at by my CIA handler. I went back up in early May, and in early May, I was chagrined. They were chastened. We were all like, God, I need to be more forthright about this. And mm-hmm. And they said, well, Susan, you know, they were alarmed. They said, please tell the White House that we invite the FBI to send a task force. Baghdad has already agreed in February of 2001 to allow an FBI task force to operate inside Iraq with authorization to conduct terrorism investigations, interview witnesses, and make arrests. And we go ahead, for God's sakes, come in. If you think there's something here, come find it. Wow. Now, if you were really serious about terrorism, wouldn't you jump on that?
You would think so, yeah.
That's a serious offer.
Mm-hmm.
That is a serious offer with a serious, you know, which would have given the United States power to solve the problem.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, but we didn't really want to solve the problem. That's the problem. You know, we didn't want to stop 9/11. Uh-oh, the Iraqis just called our bluff.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so, but this continued and the original story, and it is an official story that was planted, and people have trouble with this. This is the real information warfare. The official story, the seeds of the official story were planted months before 9/11 ever happened. The intelligence community was prepped to expect the attack to occur and to expect that Iraq would somehow be connected to it. And then Iraq kept getting in the way by saying, send in the FBI. You know, of course we want to help you. Send in the FBI. And that really caused a problem for Bush. Now imagine if the American people had been told this. They've now learned that Iraq had nothing to do with 9/11.
Right.
They finally got that through their dense heads. But they finally figured that out. But imagine if they'd heard this all from the get-go.
yeah, I mean, I can imagine how many people we could have saved. Imagine how much different the world would be. Everything that we see changing in our society right now, they always put the moniker post 9/11. You know, we did this because it's a post 9/11 world. Well, it didn't have to be a post 9/11 world, did it? You know,
no, it didn't. Yeah. We did 9/11. 9/11 was an inside job.
Yeah,
and people get so upset that there are people who become like irate. Don't say we did it. Don't say that. Don't say that. Well, it definitely was not the Arabs. Those, they didn't have anything to do with it. That's one thing you can count on. But what's happening to real whistleblowers? I want to tie this back to Scott now.
Yes, please. Yes.
Because it is, what Scott is finding, and what I am finding, is that the real, true, honest, genuine whistleblowers are like John Curacao, another American hero, the only American ever sent to prison for torture is the man who spoke up and said on national television, "Yes, we are waterboarding. America is waterboarding prisoners. Mm-hmm. Yes, there is secret rendition. Yes, there is torture." And the man who exposed the torture is the only person who's ever been prosecuted in regards to it. And he never actually did it.
That's freaking par for the course for our country. Look at the Eric Garner situation in New York, not to get way off track here, but the only person that was indicted in that whole Eric Garner situation was the guy who videotaped it. I mean, it's the same, it's the same ratio of ridiculousness no matter what scale it's on.
Videotaping it. Yeah. That's so offensive. That's appalling. That's just what is wrong with our society that the man who commits the killing, who kills, is free, but the man who exposes it is in serious trouble and will now have a felony conviction. And I guarantee they'll make sure he does time.
Oh yeah, oh yeah.
And it's like Scott. It's like Scott. The crazy thing that Scott was in the military, and then he's pretty much indicted for stolen valor. And yet he's a military guy. He's entitled to act like a military. He's required forget this entitlement. He's required to be a military. He's part of the military, so he's required to behave like a military guy. Do you know what I mean? I mean, this is just it's punishing a soldier for being a soldier for obeying the laws of a soldier.
Right. Well, it's the same as your story. You know, you're basically going out and you realize that there was a problem and took it to your supervisors and they blow up on you and you end up in a very similar situation to what happened to Scott, you know.
Well, my situation was that I requested to testify on Capitol Hill, which this is actually very important because it destroys the Dianne Feinstein argument that if all these whistleblowers would just obey the rules, the rule is they're supposed to come talk to us.
Mm-hmm.
And if there's a problem, the rule is that you take it to Capitol Hill, and then Capitol Hill will bang their gavel and hem and haw and they'll scowl on their faces and say, "Oh dear, oh dear, oh this is dreadful, this is dreadful." And instead, what happened in my case was the Bush administration had appointed a blue ribbon presidential commission to discuss it, to investigate Iraqi pre-war intelligence, and I was up to my eyeballs in that, and I went to Senator John McCain's office and Senator Trent Lott's office.
Mm-hmm.
And thanks to the Patriot Act, thanks to my indictment, we have these conversations on tape.
Oh, nice.
They are on audio. And within 30 days of my requesting to testify, through proper channels, and correctly, politely, this wasn't a screaming match.
Mm-hmm.
I was very polite and very respectful, but this is, people said, "Well, why did you go to the Republicans?" It's like, because those are the people who controlled the commission. And if you wanted to testify, then you have to ask the commission. You ask the people who are running the commission.
Right, okay.
And so that's why I did it. No, that was a mistake. Telling Congress was a mistake. And that's true. You see, this is the point. Going to Congress, 30 days later, I awoke to hear the FBI at my door.
Right.
And I had thought they were getting subpoenaed. I was like, oh, they're going to get subpoenas. I'm going to get subpoenaed and I'll be testifying. And I was very satisfied with that.
Right.
I was quite happy to be subpoenaed. But little did I know, they immediately started running around for subpoenas. All right. They ran out to get subpoenas for a grand jury and convene a grand jury against me. And I was, that's crazy. And I'm like, but I told you not to go to war. And then they blamed me once they indicted me. See, this is a crazy thing. Once they indicted me for going to them and telling them the war would be a catastrophe, mm-hmm. once I was silenced and gagged and out of the way, and especially once I was accused of being crazy and incompetent, and I would not be deprived of a trial because I was a, quote, religious maniac. Jesus. You know, I do believe in God. I definitely do. Definitely. No question. I've never backed off that position. But I still find it hard to believe that I would be described as a religious maniac. That just astounds me.
Right.
But once they had destroyed my reputation, then they went out and they told everybody that it was my fault that I never came forward. That if I knew something was wrong, I should have spoken up. I should. Now, you all know this is true because you all remember, everybody listening into this broadcast knows that that Bush blamed bad intelligence. Jane Harman, who was a Democrat, House Chair of the Intelligence Committee, said that if assets were to blame, because if they'd known that their work was being misrepresented, they should have come forward and corrected the record.
Oh, wow. So just putting it completely on you guys then.
Completely. And she was one of the people I'd gone to see. I spoke
right.
to the chief of staff. Ugh. I had a private sit-down meeting with her chief of staff and handed off these papers to her chief of staff in a one-on-one face meeting.
Mm-hmm.
With this whole thing about the peace option and why the war would be catastrophic. So you see that people who are really doing it, and then you look at why. What? Qui bono, man? Qui bono? And who benefits? Who profits? And Scott nails it when he talks about the Union Bank of Switzerland, UBS, being one of the most dirty, crooked banks. The whole Swiss banking structure is, of course, based on the shields, the privacy, the secrecy, the hidden accounts.
Mm-hmm.
And they've built up a reputation that this is a noble thing, that you're protecting yourself from government scrutiny. But what you're really doing is you're protecting – UBS has become the go-to for anyone involved in illegal activities.
Okay.
And they are steeped in corruption, protecting the criminals. And I know I have communications. I want to tell everybody how I know about this. Somebody said to me after Obama passed that whistleblower law, I am very poor, people. Don't get the idea that I'm rich by any stretch of the imagination. I lost everything in all this.
Right.
But somebody, a friend, maybe as an offhanded remark, said, hey, wouldn't it be a kick if a real whistleblower got to take part in that program?
Mm-hmm.
And the whistleblower program is not for real whistleblowers. It's not for people like Scott and me. Quite the opposite. They try to make you be silent. They try to, you know, they buy off your silence. But if you recover stolen funds,
right,
then you get a payment for that.
Mm-hmm.
And supposedly. And a lot of Wall Street executives have done it by calculating Social Security, Medicare. Medicare is a big one because that's a federal program. And what they do is they calculate future savings. Like if you were to adjust this code here or this rule, adjust this regulation, you could save, you know, $500 million over a 10-year period or something right. like that because you're projecting out in the future. It's not money that you've actually spent yet, but if you change the rule, you can make government more efficient. Okay. And then you, the whistleblower program, that's not really what we would call whistleblowing, first of all. That's just better government. But if you do that, then you get a fee from it. You get a fee for what you save the government. Well, somebody said to me, why don't, you know, two things that happened to me, with regards to theft from the black budgets, I had been robbed twice before I even got into trouble with the feds. The 2.3, the day before 9/11, and this becomes very important. The day before 9/11, Donald Rumsfeld held a press conference that $2.3 trillion had been stolen off the CIA, Pentagon, black budgets. I know you're all saying, yep, yep, yep. And when they took that money, I was robbed. I lost my payment for the locker, for negotiating the handover of the two men from Libya for the Lockerbie trial.
Really?
There was supposed to be an $8 million reward for that, and I was supposed to be paid from that program. And when they took the $2.3 trillion, I did not get anything.
Wow.
Okay, subsequently, after 9/11, my CIA handler received $13 million off the black budget appropriations, emergency appropriations for 9/11. And I should have been paid out of that as well because it was for my work with Iraq. I would have been fine, but my CIA handler pocketed the entire package for himself. There was no money spent on the operation at all. He put $13 million in his bank account tax-free because it's operations money, so it's all tax-free, and he built himself a mega mansion, mega, mega, mega mansion in McLean, Virginia, except that, gosh, as you drive down the street by his house, all of those are mega mansions.
Hmm.
They're off the charts. So what Scott is very important that he's doing is that he's been out looking for money that is stolen. It's being used in terrorism. That is a fact. UBS is at the center of this. UBS has been hiding stolen CIA accounts. UBS was involved in the is involved in our theft. UBS is involved in lots of thefts off the CIA.
Wow.
In addition to helping American taxpayers hide their assets like Brad Birkenfeld did. Ironically, Scott Bennett is entitled, just like Brad Birkenfeld was paid, Scott Bennett is also entitled to some payment for that because he took it to the government. He helped get that message out. He should be paid for that. And these stolen CIA accounts are big time through UBS.
Right.
And what UBS does, and it's stolen CIA accounts that are used in terrorism. Now, if I were the corporate media and the CNN people, I'd be interviewing Scott Bennett because terrorism is supposed to be a big deal.
Yeah, but the media is paid out of that same fund. I mean, they're terrorists as well. So, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
You're not gonna bite the hand
that
feeds
them. But the thing is, they're using, what happens is, I've been dealing with this. I'm up to my eyeballs in it. UBS, the people who steal the accounts, like CIA people, they are CIA people who get their hands on a pot of money, and what they do is instead of stealing $13 million, they have $1 billion in an account, or several hundred million dollars in an account. And what they do is they go to just like Richard Fuse used the $13 million to pay for his mansion in Virginia, they take that money as their own. And they go in and they change at UBS. They go to the bankers at UBS and they say, we want to change these master codes to access these accounts. So then they present, because the CIA has the codes and the operator, the ops person, mm-hmm. the special ops person has the codes. Both of them have the codes. So the operator goes in and says, okay, operative goes in, says change, sits down with the banker, says, I want to change these codes over to something else. And they're mine and I'm taking them. And the Swiss banker says, okay, sure, no problem. Wow. Now the Swiss banker knows damn well those are CIA accounts. And the Swiss banker knows darn damn well that the CIA has every – that this is America's money and that they should not be denying America access to these accounts. But once they've done that, they change the codes over, and then the funds – then the CIA comes back and tries to get into the accounts. The CIA can't do it. And at that point, the CIA goes to the US UBS and says, I know that they've done, I know they do this. The CIA goes in and knocks under the door and says, excuse me, what just happened to the $500 million I put in your account? Oh, well, the count, the code's been changed. I'm sorry, we're not allowed to tell you what that is. Nope, it's privacy. The owner of the account, if the owner of the account wants to share that information with you, then that's their choice, but we do not have the authority to give you that information.
Right. And there's no accountability or oversight at that
none.
Point.
None! Right. None! None! And in fact, Swiss bankers have been told, warned not to travel into the United States. UBS bankers have been warned not to travel into the United States because they could be subject to indictment and prosecution and prison time for the actions of the bank.
Wow.
And they've been warned just to don't travel to America because you're going to go – they'll pick you up and send you to jail. But they think that they're being like the Robin Hoods. And what happens is that the guys who are stealing this money then use it for very dirty purposes. Mm-hmm. They frequently are on the wrong side. They frequently get on the wrong side of the law. And – the person I know who took the, who did, you know, the irony is that after I was invited to, I, after it was suggested to me that I might like to try to get into this whistleblower program, I then had occasion to be introduced to the man who did steal the $2.3 trillion, who stole my money. You understand? Right. He stole my money. And the person said, well, you know, you could get your money if you help get the $2.3 trillion back, then you can get your money back at the same time.
Mm-hmm. So I have to ask real quick. We're getting ready to go to a break, and we got to take a 3-minute break. But I just want to ask, with all your experience with 9/11 and the, you know, just understanding the totality of the terrorist operations or all of the stuff that's going on right now, is this story that is starts with the, you know, the damaged mortgage going all the way through the international banking system, is this story bigger than 9/11? I mean, are we talking about something that's going to potentially be a larger story than 9/11 when it finally breaks and we get something done?
Yes. It's going to break the United States.
Right.
It's going to cause a financial collapse of the United States. It's in real danger of that.
Well, you heard it here first, ladies and gentlemen. Bigger than 9/11. We're going to have to go to this 3-minute break. We're going to be right back. We'll bring Greg and Scott back into the discussion. I appreciate you guys being so patient waiting out there. And I appreciate all of you guys sticking with us through this 3-minute break. This is, of course, a major dose of your daily dose of deep protection. Whatever. We'll be back in 3 minutes, guys. Keep right here.
Chris and Sheree Geo here, founders of Truth Frequency Radio. We just wanted to take a moment to thank all of you for making TFR the biggest and the best independent radio station out there.
When we first entered the alternative media scene in 2009, we were really taken aback by the amount of infighting, backbiting, fear-based reporting, and ego-driven personalities. That's when we knew we had to set ourselves apart and set a new standard in broadcasting. And thus, TFR was conceived as a listener-supported station with no corporate or outside influence and limited commercial interruptions.
You can support our efforts by signing up for a VIP membership at truthfrequencyradio.com/signup or by making a donation at truthfrequencyradio.com/donate.
For less than $4 a month, you can ensure that TFR continues broadcasting for years to come. Real people, real radio.
Wherever you are, make it TFR.
After work, I'm so tired that I want to be left alone to sleep.
Hey, listen to me.
Who are you?
I'm you years ago, when you felt healthy and young and everything worked on your body. Do you remember that?
Yes. I wish I felt like that now.
You can feel like that again with a new microplant powder formulation called Iodine Now. It cleans the entire body from head to toe and feeds the body what it really needs. You'll be in a better mood and you'll find more drive in your romantic life.
Really?
I gotta try Iodine Now and feel good again. It also protects you from radiation, heavy metals, fluoride, chlorine, and bromine, including cancer and most major diseases. You'll be amazed. You can be your own doctor. I want to keep you out of the hospital and off pharmaceuticals.
Wow, why are you so nice to me?
Because I'm you. You're out of shape, and I need a better-looking future.
Call 888-910-4367. That's 888-910-4367. Iodine Now, only at MUSA.org.
We all know the importance of having storable foods, but what about when the food runs out? What then? For real food independence, you need a supply of non-hybrid seeds. Introducing the Survival Seed Vault from MyPatriotSupply.com. The Survival Seed Vault is sealed for freshness and includes 20 varieties of easy-to-grow non-hybrid seeds for only $37.95. For less than $40, you've got real food independence. And the Survival Seed Vault includes detailed planting and seed-saving instructions. Imagine the barter power you'll have when the food supply does collapse. Right now, save $9 instantly when you buy three or more Survival Seed Vaults from MyPatriotSupply.com. Same-day shipping on all orders, plus free shipping on orders over $49. Call 866-229-0927. That's 866-229-0927. Or discover more emergency preparedness products at MyPatriotSupply.com. That's MyPatriotSupply.com.
The State of Cannabis with Liam Sheff. Mondays on Truth Frequency Radio.
Welcome back to the broadcast, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you guys for sticking with us through that 3-minute break. And, man, I'll tell you what, we've opened an amazing can of worms today, ladies and gentlemen, because the overarching effect of this entire corporate criminal cabal is such that it is perpetuating violence against our troops, against civilians, innocent people all around the world. And I don't want to lose focus on the fact that the source of this money, the actual what created the wealth initially was this fraud that took place and is continually still taking place right now involving your mortgages. And I want to make sure we make that point clear, because it's easy to get all the way over into the deep end of the pool and talk about, you know, funneling money through foreign entities and you know.
Well, let me tell you how it all connects together as I see it.
Okay.
Because there is definitely a connection. Right before the break, you said, will this be bigger than 9/11? And I said, yes, it will break the United States economically and financially. Mm-hmm. And here's why. The people who are the thieves are heavily involved, and I know this because I have the accounts. I actually have the accounts.
Right.
They're heavily involved in the derivatives market, where they've invested intensely in just beyond a hand over fist, fabricating money that doesn't really exist. Mm-hmm. You know, they've used mortgages are a big part of that. They are a large portion of the derivative scam. But it's inventing value where nothing really is there, okay? And then the thieves, of course, want to get their are intensely interested in collecting their cash wealth. It's, you know, having paper money isn't any fun if you can't spend it.
Right.
Like if you have a balance sheet that says you have like $100 trillion in the bank, well, you want to have $100 trillion in your bank account. Mm-hmm. You don't want to have it on Wall Street. You want to have it where you can actually, like, go buy yourself a billion-dollar yacht.
Yeah, where it's liquid.
See, this is how ridiculous it is. I mean, you couldn't spend $1 billion on a yacht. That's the silliest thing in the world. But this is what they think. This is how these crazy people, these greedy, crazy people think. And it's just, it's impossible. But what they have to do then is, a lot of this is targeted on the U.S. mortgage industry, and they have to force the United States government to authorize them pretty much at gunpoint. The United States government does not really want to do this. Force the United States to let them download this money and cash it out. And until now, they've been trading these darn derivatives, but they've never really been able to cash them out.
Okay.
Okay. Now, thanks to Citigroup passing this, muscling in this rider on the $1.1 trillion 2015 budget, Congress has given the go-ahead for the banks to download this funds from the, which comes from the mortgage market. But it's being, what they don't understand is that it's also part of a ring of, it's wild, but it's out of China. It is tied to China. And it's tied to a ring of thieves that were originally using our $2.3 trillion. This is my connection to it. Mm-hmm. The $2.3 trillion that was stolen off the Pentagon, our share of it has now grown to $13.6 trillion. Plus, there's more money. That's only about 10% of what they took. This one crew has about $130 or $140 trillion that are based out of HSBC, which they want HSBC and UBS,
right?
Which HSBC and UBS want to trade through Citibank in New York. And so Citibank rushed through this thing because Citibank imagines that they're going to be able to catch, that they're going to do a big, right now, it's happening right at this minute. There's a big debt swap going on. HSBC is trying to unload its stolen accounts that were stolen with UBS. So it's coming through HSBC, but it was done through the collaboration with UBS.
Okay.
UBS was the one that took the master codes and switched the master codes. And then UBS switching the master codes empowered the thieves to run this huge churning scam through the mortgage, through the derivatives market and the mortgage market targeting the United States. And it's going to be deadly because now HSBC has forced the United States to grant it permission to cash out the derivatives. And that's where, and that means that they're going to have bail-ins mm-hmm. because they're going to have to use our tiny little bank deposits. My humble little money is going to go to pay these thieves there so that they can have their earnings. And that's how the whole thing fits together. And that's why Scott's story is so important because he shows the criminal, his story is a critical missing picture point in this thing, mm-hmm. which is that this is a criminal enterprise. It's not just that bankers are doing this and they really shouldn't because it's a really stupid thing to do. As Greg Morse will tell you, it's a very dangerous game that they've played anyway, but it is a, but Scott's perspective is vital for your understanding because he shows that this is a criminal element that has been acting this out and that UBS has been at the heart of this for terrorism and for thefts off the black budgets. The only suggestion I would make to you, Scott, is that you say terrorism and criminal elements, because it's all things black. It's all yep. things dirty. But Scott's information is vital, and that's why he ended up in prison. He just didn't know why. He just didn't know why they had to nail him, but he got when he started going after UBS, he was getting the bad guys who have been part of the CIA, who have been, you know, part of, you know, these people are CIA employees, like my CIA handler, they are on the receiving end of these black budget monies, and then they change the master codes at UBS. And so when he exposed that the monies are being used for nefarious purposes, he got to the crux of the problem, which it's America's money. Right. It is CIA money, and UBS is helping the CIA employees steal it. And it's rampant. It is so big. And that then the stolen monies that are being taken out of the CIA are being used for all these other horrible things.
I want to throw it back to Greg for just a second. I don't want him to get lost in the shuffle here, because I think that his RICO lawsuit obviously is going to put a major monkey wrench into the bail-in process, but we have to get it initiated. So, Greg, if you wouldn't mind coming back on here, I'm just curious if you have anything you'd like to add about what we're talking about right now, and just kind of stress again how important the RICO aspect of this lawsuit is, and then we'll let Scott and get Scott back on and try and corroborate some of that importance as well, and we'll talk about some action items. We need to get to a solution here, guys.
Well, JD, I'm not sure that I have anything to add to what Susan said. She's got an amazing story to tell. We come at it from a little bit different perspective, only in this regard. We can talk about this stuff all we want, but until we can jurisdictionally put the pressure on the cockroaches and shine the light of day on them to where we actually make them afraid of us as a collective American citizenry, mm-hmm. My fear is that it will stay just that. It will just be talking. The reason that we've gone the way we've gone is because somebody, as Susan has done a really good job, I think, in explaining the connection between the two parts. It goes back to my analogy in the first hour when I said, if you have the sugar in one bucket and the butter in the other, but you don't connect the two, you're not going to build a cake. And that's been going on for a long time.
Right.
Because I was very deep in black. It was 30 years ago, but I saw this stuff when I was 25 years old. This is not a new construct. When we were running drugs out of the Pacific into Miramar, into LAX, the money scenario, the construct was the same. It was just smaller. Mm-hmm. So what we've done here is we have said, look, we have to call the real power in this country. And that's the American citizens to come together and to magnetize themselves, mobilize themselves around a construct like our petition. Why? Because if we do that, then everybody gets to tell their story. That's what I think is so important. And I'm so appreciative that Susan's willing to support the effort, because when I first drafted that petition, I've been to this ball game before. And I know that talk is one thing, action is another. Mm-hmm. And the thing that bothers me is that I think everyone in America should know Susan's story, which they don't. A lot of do, but we got 321 million people, right?
That's right.
And Scott's story should be known. But remember, there's, and I don't mean to be long-winded, JD, but you asked, as you always do, a very insightful, very deep question to where there is not one simplistic answer. You know, I try to give short answers, but this is not one of those questions to which I can do that.
Yeah, I do that strategically so I don't have to talk on the radio.
Well, I know you very well, so I know that's the way that works. But here's the deal. There are more than one classification of whistleblower, and people don't understand that. My legal classification as a whistleblower is every bit as legally real as Susan's and Scott's, but there is a key difference. The history of the whistleblower program started theoretically to protect people like Susan and Scott that were directly linked to the government. That program then, under the USC and the various agencies, expanded to include American citizens like me that don't have those linkages.
Okay.
That's a huge point of discrimination. It's irrefutable, and it's in the code. So when I filed my whistleblower packages, which you can see on the website, you know it's there, all the applications, name, address, social security number, everything's there. Mm-hmm. With the IRS and the SEC, I'm a different cat to them. Susan, and much more so than me or Scott, she was dealing at the upper echelons of the political structure. That means that she's aware of a lot of information that probably, I'm not going to speak for, but I'm guessing there's a lot of stuff Susan knew that the president didn't know.
Yes.
And that's I've been studying Susan for 10 years. Now, I met her specifically through Scott, but I've been studying this lady for a long time, and she is a walking wealth of information. But here's the problem: that the reason I formed the petition movement was for this reason. We have to have a platform whereby everybody, regardless of their role, has the opportunity to come together, go with us to Congress, and tell their story in an environment which they on their own cannot pull off. You know Scott can't do it. He's already told you. I've got all the letters.
Right.
Susan's the same way. She wrote over, what, 11,000, Susan, letters and emails and all kinds of communication?
I had a database of every chief of staff. An email database of every chief of staff, legislative director, press secretary, and foreign policy assistant in the House and Senate.
Wow.
And so I pounded all of them with documentation against the war. From some of it I wrote, some of it all of you wrote. I pulled out the best parts and made sure they got it. And then they turned around and said that I never spoke up.
So you see, here's the point. She's got a lot of information that she submitted, but they didn't react to her except by throwing her into Carswell.
Right.
Okay. That doesn't show respect to the character and the courage of this lady. That's not the way the system was statutorily designed, but because the criminal cabal is overseeing the implementation, if you don't follow the rules mean nothing. So, and she gave two or three great examples about guys that were true insider whistleblowers, if I can term them that, versus private American citizens like me.
Right.
But they didn't get their money. She should have been owed money. She didn't get it. Well, that's not really the point, is it, for any of us? Because the IRS and the SEC are running like scared rabbits for me in my RICO case. And if I were to get the percentage, which is a minimum of 1%, on mine, I'd be a multi-billionaire based on the evidence that I gave to them regarding the $8 trillion a month at par value that the DTCC is trading in derivatives.
Wow.
And because that is an income tax evasion operation, because the source of money comes from the RIMICs, which have claimed tax-exempt status, but they are all illegally formed and operated. Therefore, they do not qualify under the RIMIC tax-exempt status with the SEC. So, therefore, all the monies they generate are considered to be not revenue but taxable income.
Man, you would think at this point you would be like honorary king of the IRS, because you basically by yourself have accomplished more than, you know, the entire history of the IRS if you believe in the income tax and, you know, whatever. But I can't imagine that you haven't been given a standing ovation at several, you know, where they're throwing flowers at you for saving them all this money. But it obviously goes to show just how convoluted all of these people's interests really are once you start digging below the surface. I want to turn it back over to Scott for a second, because we had a discussion off air the other day and about a listener response. Now, ladies and gentlemen, we've talked ad nauseum again about this petition that we would like you guys to sign out there. We want to get this petition signed. We'd like to get 100,000 people. If you're a veteran, this is part of your oath. I mean, you need to be doing this. But because we haven't had the response that we had hoped to have so far, we've tried to kind of change tactics. And one of the things that has happened out there is that you, the listeners, have decided to take it upon yourselves and carry this information by hand to state and local representatives and start to demand accountability. So while we're talking about what the solution is, some of us behind the scenes are already doing it, and that's exactly what we want to see. I was going to try and have the listener that I'm speaking about on the air today, but unfortunately she is working. She's a teacher, and she's obviously education more important right now than this. But Scott, I'm hoping that you can relay the story of that woman and why it is so important to outline what it is that she did and how we can all follow suit in that same respect, if you would, sir.
Yeah. This was a gal in Colorado. She's also a precinct leader, and she's also Hispanic. And she contacted me and communicated, that she really did the operation that every single citizen can do and should do, because it is the equivalent of invading Normandy and putting the Germans on the run. She went to a town hall meeting for her newly elected congressman, and a senator was there. She took a cell phone, and she took my materials. She printed them out off the website, put them in a manila envelope, and went to this town hall meeting and said, Congressman Conkren, I think it was, Congressman, you've been given this material by a military officer, and he was imprisoned, and you haven't done anything about it. I'm giving it to you, handing it to you, in witnesses, before my peers, before my political constituents, and she gave it to him. He turned pale. He ran like a deer in the headlights, but he had to accept it. That's on the record. That's videotaped. That's been witnessed. That maneuver is so brilliant. It's so simple, and it's so devastating that I know Susan, Greg, and I just jumped off our chair. We were so, inspired that an American citizen would take that and run with it. And it was a woman. We've all talked about women in this country are the only hope for this country.
Oh, that's really generous of you, but I think there are a few good guys too.
There are a few good guys. I'd say they're good because of their women, their moms, their wives. But this gal went and she turned these guys on the retreat, and every single person listening should get a cell phone, get a buddy, go to a town hall meeting, go to their political representative's office and videotape them going in saying, here's material you need to be aware of, and I want an answer within a week what you're going to do about it. Because in this material are letters that you were sent in 2012 about terrorist financing, soldiers getting killed, Union Bank of Switzerland, congressional cover-up. Your name is included there. I want an explanation of why you didn't do anything about these reports, because my neighbor's kid has been killed by a bomb that was bought by Swiss bank accounts. And you've got blood on your hands.
And let me add one thing to that, that I want you to update your records. And I want you to keep saying, you to add this in, because it is true. Swiss bank accounts that have been, your kid has been killed by bombs paid for by Swiss bank accounts that have been diverted from the CIA bank accounts.
Yes.
And that is so important, because not only is it Swiss, it's not just any Swiss bank account. Right. Baby, right. It's our Swiss bank account.
Right, right.
And they're using it for terror. They are using it to fund terrorism. I will tell you a little story, a little birdie that I have a fact. I have the Swift wire. UBS did a Swift wire for $30 billion. To Iran, and they tried to run the blockade. They tried to run the blockade on Iran, and the monies that the person who was doing who tried to do the downloading from the monies for Iran is this federal prisoner. He's an inmate. He's in prison. And they tried to give Iran $30 billion. And it's just unbelievable that it was coming. UBS was involved, and it was just, and they tried to get a prosecutor from The Hague to sign off on it. Wow. And it's just crazy stuff. And so, what Scott is saying is, amplify it by the fact that these are stolen accounts from the United States, that UBS is assisting in the theft by changing the master codes. And that's my contribution to Scott's story. Right. It's everything Scott is saying to you about the terrorism financing, about the abuses in the derivatives market, because what they're doing is they get the stolen money, then they invest it. Yeah. And the way that they invest it is through these derivatives markets. And the way that it's going to come and bite us very soon is that now that they've got this on paper, they want liquidity. They want to cash it out. And unfortunately, Citibank, which is targeted, I have an account number that I've given to I gave this to the FBI people. Did they do anything with it? We don't know. But Citibank there is an account that the criminals set up at Citibank so that they could swap out the derivatives from HSBC and UBS over to Citibank, and it's all ill-gotten money.
Right.
It's all it's illegal money that was stolen from the United States that's now been churned in the derivatives market to generate income, and now they want the United States taxpayer and U.S. consumers to pay them back for what they stole.
And they're going to get it. They're going to get
and
it.
They
they're
going to
codify it. That's what's going to happen. I mean, that's what, unless we get involved. And I wanted to come back.
That's why Scott's story is so vitally important. You got to know Scott's story.
Right. And I wanted to reiterate kind of what Scott was saying, too, about the lady taking this information in and making it known. We have a good opportunity right now because there's a whole new freshman class of congressmen. And these some you might get a wild hair up their butt who said, I want to make a name for myself and I want to be the guy that's going down on the right side of history. You know what I mean? So, Scott, do you have anything else to add to that?
Yeah, one thing that's coming up, you're talking about putting political legs on this and implementing political change. I think there's a wonderful opportunity to make a major invasion and an impact in D.C. like never before, and that is the Conservative Political Action Conference that's coming up February 25th to 28th. I've gone to this years, you know, past. This is where all of the politicians who are named in my report, and Susan knows them too, are going to come before CPAC and do their little dance and make their little speech and prepare to run for president and say how much they love America, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Well, this conference is where every single person listening to your show can write, can call, and can demand that Susan, Greg, and I are exhibited, are presented, this material is examined, and every single politician that walks up on this stage addresses this subject matter.
Right.
We're not paying this conference just to listen and watch you do a little dance. We want to hold you in court and say, you're up CPAC, what's your answer to this? Mm-hmm. This involves Swiss banks, terrorism, CIA, the whole gamut of a drama, Mr. And I can name them right now in the book, in the letter I sent to Michael Isikoff. This involves right here 37 congressmen and senators that I communicated to Isikoff that I sent copies of this report to who've done nothing. So if these clowns get up at CPAC, I want every single participant in a seat to stand up and say, what have you got to say about this?
Mm-hmm.
And you don't run. Plausible deniability is not an option. You better fall to your knees and apology. Or say, damn it, I'm as outraged as you, I'm going to do something about it. And that's our goal, is to have these politicians stand up and do something about it for our money, like Susan articulates, Greg articulates, and for our soldiers who are dying, who are wounded, who are coming back as traumatized corpses, who are in VA hospitals with bags over their head because they can't think, they're vegetables. Those men are being damaged. The flower of America is being destroyed by money that's financing terrorism, and all of these political figures know about it. So this is the conference coming up. I think no one can do it better than you, JD.
Oh.
I don't think there's a person on the alternative radio. You and Susan Lindauer make a hell of a Wonder Twins superhero duo.
I love Truth Frequency Radio. I love all of my fellow hosts.
Me too. Yeah. Me too. I forgot to mention that, and I appreciate you bringing that up, Scott, that Susan does, in fact, have her very own show on Truth Frequency. I'd also highly recommend go and check out her book, Extreme Prejudice. You can get it on Amazon. It's highly recommended. We are out of time, you guys. I haven't been able to come up with anything creative to tie all this together, so probably just going to have to thank
everybody
you guys humbly.
Scott.
Yes.
God, listen to Scott's radio interviews because he's got something very important to say to you.
I agree, and I don't want to leave Greg out of that. Greg, you guys have both done such a fantastic job. Thank you guys both for being on the show today. And Susan, thank you for making an appearance as well. Humbled to have all three of you here joining us today.
Excellent. Thank you, JD.
Absolutely. You guys take care. Have a wonderful night.
Truth Frequency Radio is your number one source for news and information without the hate, hype, and fear. We are proud to bring you cutting-edge programs like The Kev Baker Show,
The Christopher Everard Show,
The Freedom Link with Joe Joseph,
Truth Frequency with Chris and Sherry Geo,
Red Pill Reports
with J.D. Moore,
X-Squared with Brooks Agnew,
Down the Rabbit Hole with Popeye,
Freaky Friday
with The Woo Crew,
Waking Up the Masses
with Robert Bruce. Phoenix Rising Radio, and dozens more. Did you know you can listen from any computer, mobile device, or from any telephone by dialing 832-225-5308. Or call into your favorite show toll-free at 866-37-TRUTH. Uncensored talk and news you won't hear in the mainstream media. 24 hours a day. Truth Frequency Radio. Wherever you are, make it TFR. Real people, real radio.